This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Darren Adam.
Morning, it is 3 minutes past three. It's Thursday, the 30th of June. It's LBC, leading Britain's conversation. I'm Darren Adam with you till 4 o'clock this morning. We say biro, but we actually mean pen. Biro is a brand name of pen, but the two have become synonymous. We say Hoover, we actually mean vacuum cleaner. Again, those two words have become synonymous. And I think the same is true of iPhone and smartphone, isn't it? That's where we are now. Not least because all the other smartphones that aren't iPhones look like iPhones. They're all basically rectangular slabs of glass and plastic and metal, or some combination of the three. The iPhone is 15 years old. And yes, there were smartphones before the iPhone, but we can't really remember what they were. The iPhone's changed the game. 2007, 29th of June 2007 is when the iPhone was first introduced. 15 years later, Apple is worth $3 trillion. You don't hear that word often. We talk about billions and hundreds of billions, but Apple is worth $3 trillion. And a big part of the reason that it's worth that sum of money is because of the success of the iPhone. And it was radical because it did all of those things in one go, but it also didn't look rubbish. It looked like something brand new. And as I say, smartphones now, they all tend to look a bit like the iPhone also does. Originally costing $499, it had 4 gigabytes of storage. Let's just put that in perspective. My iPhone has got 1 terabyte, which is 250 times as much. Is that right? Yeah, 250 times as much as the original iPhone did. And it still is recognisably an iPhone, isn't it? It's still recognisably that thing which was first introduced back in 2007. There have been 34 different iPhone models. There are 8 currently on sale. But thinking of the iPhone as a smartphone, how much has the smartphone changed your life? Has it changed society? Big macro question here. How much has it changed society, for better or for worse? It is a device that we all carry around, that famously is a searchable database of all human knowledge. But it's so much more than that. I mean, it's a phone as well. We shouldn't forget its primary function. But the phone function is one of the least used these days of all the things that a smartphone can do. Actually making and receiving phone calls is one of the least popular functions. Think of all the things that it can do. Yes, you've got access to the internet, or at least the World Wide Web. You've got access to all social media, which I suspect is the primary purpose that many people currently put their phones to. Who doesn't have all the apps for all of the different social media loaded onto their phones? In terms of the other stuff that you can do with this, you can pay for things. The wallet app in my phone has all my credit cards and plastic cards loaded in there. Similarly, sort of store cards and loyalty cards as well. All of that's there in one place. We could probably, until the end of this show, probably until the end of Steve's show, we're not going to overrun it, but if we did, we could probably talk till 7 o'clock this morning about all the different things that smartphones can do, many of which, of course, they could not do when the iPhone was released in 2007. 0345 6060 973 is the number. Text 84850, tweet at LBC, email darren@lbc.co.uk. All of those things you can do, of course, from the same device. Tell me about the difference that the smartphone has made to your life and whether you think it's been a net boon or otherwise for society in general. Lots of stuff that you can do on a smartphone. You can also do on a computer as well. But the ease of access to all of these functions is not to be underestimated, I think. Earlier on, I spoke to Fevzi Turkalap, I should say, editor of the tech advice site GadgetDetective.com and host of the Gadget Detective podcast, and he told me if he remembered his first iPhone.
Yes, I do. I ran out and bought one straight away, and it was quite a big deal, wasn't it? Because Apple weren't the inventors of the smartphone. I mean, the smartphone was invented in the early 90s by IBM, but Apple made it easy to use.
Yes.
You know, they did away with all the buttons. You know, we used to have BlackBerrys and Palm Pilots and all things like that. And they were fairly smart for the day. But they had these fixed keyboards. And Apple said, no, we're doing away with all that. The whole front of it pretty much is going to be this touch screen. And we're going to have this really easy to use interface. And that was revolutionary.
We used to say one day there will be a device, we'll just call it the device, that does everything. You'll be able to make phone calls, you'll be able to surf the web, you'll be able to send emails, you can do all the things that you can currently do on a phone as well. And it will have a colour screen that's going to be magical. Now, prior to the iPhone, I had, a Sony Ericsson P something, which did a lot of those things. But looking back, it was clumsy, it was plasticky, it had a little plastic flap that came down that uncovered half of the screen, it had a little stylus that sort of stuck onto the sides and all the rest of it. And it did all of the things, sort of, that the iPhone did, but it was so inelegant compared with that first iteration of the iPhone, which is why I think, when we think of smartphones, we still think of iPhones, don't we? Because whatever brand of smartphone you get, it basically looks like an iPhone. It's got that flat, buttonless quality to it that phones didn't have before the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually getting harder for manufacturers, including Apple, to differentiate their products, you know. I mean,
yes.
A slab of glass, you know, with a colour touch screen. It's a bit like most cars have a wheel in each corner, you know. We've come to the point where the design is, at least for the moment, somewhat agreed upon, although I do think we're going to have some step changes, things like, you know, foldable devices with foldable screens within them. You know, that will come. And eventually, I think the death of the smartphone altogether and the incorporation of its functions. So just in the same way that the iPod was recently laid to death, you know, the last iPod, because it had been, you know, its features were long ago subsumed into the iPhone.
Yes.
But in the same way, the features of the smartphone could be subsumed into wearable technology. For example, a pair of glasses that projects a screen where you can, instead of having to have a touch interface, maybe it will track your eyes, maybe some voice, maybe eventually thought. You know, it will have a brain interface and so forth.
That's quite a leap from where we are, though, isn't it? Even 15 years after the start of the iPhone.
The thought bit is,
yes.
But the rest of it is not. So
yeah.
What we're seeing at the moment is and Apple is working on a pair of glasses at the moment. It's probably at least a couple of years away. In the beginning, they will be companion devices to the iPhone in the same way that the Apple Watch is a companion device to the iPhone. But eventually, those wearable companion devices will be standalone devices, and people will only need smartphones for sort of more niche applications, I would say.
For me, it was always about having access to the internet in my pocket. What difference do you think that has made to society? And it's not just about being able to access all human knowledge, it's about being able to access any social media platform that you want as well. But what sort of changes do you think those functions have brought?
Well, it's been huge, isn't it? So again, Apple wasn't the first. The first internet-connected smartphone was mobile phone was 2001. And even when the iPhone was launched in 2007, the problem was we only had 2G connectivity. It was really, really, by modern standards, very slow. And that limited what you could, you know, usefully do with it. You couldn't stream music or video or anything like that.
It was intended really to be connected to Wi-Fi networks, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first iPhone. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it had Wi-Fi and, we've had, the 3G. Oh, what people forget, by the way, is with the first iPhone, there was no App Store.
Yeah,
and I would say the App Store was one of the keys. The fact that it provided this standardized App Store, which Apple is now being criticized for because, you know, it says people say it's anti-competitive, but they produced a safe environment where people could produce apps, and you could get these really, and still you can get really sophisticated apps for free or sometimes for pennies, whereas, you know, the desktop computer version of it can cost you £100, but on the App Store it's 99p, and so that's been a big revolution as well. The way I view my iPhone is, okay, I pay a lot for the device, but then I get software on it which is cheap as chips, and I can do all sorts of things. And it is a shame to me that all of this great, fantastic technology, powerful processors, terabytes of storage, wonderful crisp screens, and what do we do with it? We do social media. I think it's a real shame.
Well, I've just taken delivery. It was a birthday present, and I love it, of the iPhone 13 Pro Max.
Yes.
Prior to that, I had the iPhone X, which is basically the 10. Prior to that, it was the 6 Plus. So I think that speaks to the fact that actually these devices, they are intended, well, whether they're intended to last or not, they're certainly built to last. You don't need to get a new one every time there is a numerical upgrade. You can go three or four iterations without having to buy the very latest one, and they still keep up with the demands made on them, don't they?
Yeah, and although, again, Apple is sometimes criticised, but one of the things that they do well is they provide support operating system updates for approximately 5 years. Now, if you look at Android phones, you know, some phones you never get an update. If they guarantee you 2 or even 3 years, and that's a marketing point for an Android phone. So 5 years, yeah, I've still got an iPhone 7 Plus, which is still very serviceable, about not to be serviceable with iOS 16 in the autumn. But until then, it's done 5 years. It's done well, and it's still not laggy, even after that time. It's quite remarkable.
Going back to the very first iPhone that I had, and this is also an interesting phenomenon as well. If you've been and stuck with the iPhone as your smartphone of choice for all of those years, you've presumably, every time you've got a new one, you have copied all the data across. And that means, I don't know about you, Fevzy, but I like to keep all of my text messages because it's just easier than deleting them.
Yeah,
the space exists for that to happen now. I have, on my brand new iPhone 13 Pro Max, the first text message that I sent on my first iPhone 15 years ago, 5th of December 2007. So obviously I didn't buy it straight away when it came out, but within a few months, to a number that I no longer recognise. Hey, you, are you coming to the party on Saturday? Would be good to see you. No idea to whom that was sent, but I'll tell you what, if I ever write a book, I've got 15 years of text messages here to refer to.
It's quite special, isn't it? And we've seen so many changes. I mean, we take a lot, because it's been quite incremental, and I think, again, that's one of the problems, because smartphones and iPhones are quite mature devices now. Every year the camera is a bit better, processor is a little bit faster, it does things marginally better, which is why this idea of buying a new phone every year is a nonsense, and in terms of the planet, not a very good idea. But
in terms of your wallet, not a very good idea.
Well, yeah, but they do these sort of subscription services now where you pay a certain amount and you get the latest iPhone every year. And I just don't think that's the best way to do it. My advice to people about technology is keep it for a while and learn to use it. Same with just think of the camera on your phone. The best way to get better pictures out of your camera phone is not to not to buy a better phone with a better sensor. It's just to get to know the camera that you've got really well and getting the best from it.
And that's something that's really improved, isn't it, over the years? I think of the photos that were taken on my first iPhone, and they're like sort of crude crayon drawings compared with the extraordinarily high-resolution photos that you can take. Now, and video as well. You can film in 4K at 60 frames per second. It's astonishing, the leap that's been made.
And I think that points to one of the other really interesting areas of how photography is changing. The first iPhone had a 2-megapixel camera. Now we're up to about 12, but it's not about megapixels, because there's other companies that do 48 megapixel cameras, and even 64 doesn't necessarily give you better images. But the sensors inside smartphones, even the best of them, are small compared to mid-range digital cameras. You get much bigger sensors on them, so why aren't the pictures that much poorer? And the reason is that you've got these super fast processors in these phones, which cameras could only dream of having, and they do digital photography in the sense that they process every pixel, they optimize every pixel before it's stored. So you get high dynamic range pictures. Like with a conventional camera, you take a picture and you've got to compromise. Do you correctly expose the face and wash out the background? But with an iPhone and with other smartphones, the technology is there. So cameras are no longer just these passive recorders of light that comes through a lens, be it on a film or a digital sensor. They are now actively processing those dots, every single dot, in video and in terms of still photography as well. And it just means that they produce far better images than this hardware has any right to produce.
We've talked about devices that might track your vision in terms of the glasses that we've talked about, maybe even the brain interfaces at some point further down the line. None of those coming in iOS 16, which is the next operating system update for portable Apple devices. The next iPhone, you're right, it's going to be an incremental change. It'll be a slightly better battery life or a slightly flatter screen or a slightly bigger screen or a slightly tougher case.
Yes.
Those are the changes we're going to see until the more radical developments that you described come on stream.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's a shame because this year's iPhone, the 14s, first of all, the non-Pro models look like they're going to have the same processor as the 13, so you'll be pleased to hear that, having got a 13, that the 14 is not going to do anything to disgrace the 13. That's the thing. People just think, oh, you know, suddenly my phone is less good. No, it's not.
Upgrade envy.
Yeah, I mean, the Pro models will have the faster processor, but this year's models will still have these really slow proprietary Lightning connectors on them, which is ironic that they're called Lightning connectors because now they're really slow. Because one of the things that's happened is that Apple have brought along this video format called ProRes, which is really, really smart, but it takes up humongous amounts of storage, which even if you've got the storage in your phone, you bought one of the more capacious phones, getting it off the phone onto another platform via Lightning cable is tortuous. So in a way, you know, anyone who's interested in that sort of video might be well advised to jump a generation. And by then, I think the European Union may have forced Apple to have a USB-C connector, which will be much, much, much faster. So there'll be a number of improvements. I would tend to, if I'm not desperate, if my phone isn't going to die on me, I tend to skip this year and go for next year's.
All right, Fevzi, thank you very much indeed. Fevzi Turkalp, editor of the tech advice site GadgetDetective.com, host of the Gadget Detective podcast.